This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Joy 94.9's Family Matters podcast, your light-hearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Did you know that Berry Street seeks members of our LGBTI communities to become foster carers? Not only do they have a proud tradition of training and embracing LGBTIQ carers, they officially support marriage equality. Learn more now at berrystreet.org.au, a proud Joy sponsor for over 5 years.
The kids are all right. As for our presenters, Family Matters, Joy 94.9.
Oh, Tay-Tay.
That was for you, Beck.
Thank you. You are listening to Family Matters with Beck, Gina and Steph. I'm so glad Dave's not here and I get to do all the introductions.
You do.
He just cramps my style. Anyway.
Look, he didn't look like he was cramping your style on Saturday night. You two looked very comfortable together.
Yes, we are. He follows me around. I like it. Anyway, we are talking about some very interesting things tonight and some slightly more serious topics. But before we start that, we are giving away 2 tickets to Boob Juice, which is... Yeah, okay, we get it, Gina.
I'm the only lesbian in the room. I'm going to get excited.
Do you feel responsible for the boob talk? Because you're the only lesbian in the village. Sorry. Boob Juice is a heartwarming comedy about a first-time mum with postnatal depression. And I want to hear your awkward parents group stories, or if you'd like to go with Gina's idea for the competition, which is your favourite Boob Juice flavour. So, look, do with that what you will.
Message in
0427JOY949 or on air at joy.org.au.
That's the thing. And don't forget your member number as well.
But coming round to something a little bit more sensible, ladies, we have a guest
Someone
in the
has
studio.
To.
Yes, the grown-up here. We have a guest in the studio with us tonight. Julie Mounter is a general psychologist. Her main area of interest is working with men and women with perinatal depression and anxiety. She's passionate about spreading the message that dads matter too. In fact, her master's research project investigated the prevalence, current services and the treatments based on evidence that have been shown to help men with perinatal depression and anxiety in Australia. Welcome to the studio, Julie.
Welcome,
Thank you
Julie.
Very much. It's great to be here.
And yes, your husband is gorgeous.
Oh, he's very hot. Yes, I know.
Before we do get into the questions, we do remind our listeners, yes, this is a serious and upsetting topic and you can always reach out to Lifeline on 13 11 14, Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36, and there are so many, you know, everything from switchboards, so we will keep reminding our listeners of those numbers throughout the night.
So Julie, I have a very basic question to begin with, because today in doing a little bit of research I came across a term that I hadn't seen before, and it's been a while since I've had kids. So in the past I've heard certainly about postnatal anxiety and depression and antenatal anxiety and depression, but I hadn't heard about perinatal anxiety and depression. Can you perhaps, for the listeners, because we are going to sort of use these terms during our conversation tonight, perhaps explain the difference between the three?
Yeah, for sure. So it's become apparent with the research that we often used to think about postnatal depression and anxiety, and that's probably the thing that
we're most common with.
Most people have heard of that term. But it's become apparent that often the symptoms actually start during pregnancy for both mums and dads and carers and partners. And so the term perinatal encompasses all of that. So it encompasses the time during the pregnancy and then roughly the first year after the birth, or after the birth of the baby, or the baby's joined the family. Mm. So that's the term. And antenatal is a term that we don't use so much, so we just have the perinatal around there. Antenatal is before the birth and postnatal is after. So perinatal encompasses it all.
All encompassing.
So with that 12-month period of diagnosis, sort of after the baby's born, how long can someone expect to have perinatal depression for? I mean, is there a time frame around it? Does it magically disappear, or does it, you know, is that about treatment, or?
That's a really good question, and it's got a number of answers. So the first answer would be the sooner somebody seeks help, the shorter the period of depression and anxiety would last. It also depends on the severity as well. So somebody with quite severe perinatal depression and anxiety may have a longer episode of it. I don't think I could give you an exact cutoff date from when it would stop. It's multifactorial, depending on.
But it doesn't magically disappear, let's say, because a mother stops breastfeeding or a father returns to work, or there's no sort of.
No.
It is.
We are hearing, and that's it. Like you, Steph, we did some research, and there are old wives' tales of what cures, you know, all these things, a good sleep or, you know, a good holiday or, you know, all these kind of things. And actually I was mentioning to Julie off air, I had somebody heard what we were talking about tonight and I mentioned dads. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it's got nothing to do with it. This was a guy saying to me, it's got nothing to do with dads because dads don't have the baby and they don't go through that hormonal change. So this is something, and you quickly mentioned it when you mentioned the definition. Mm. This is something that isn't just about the birth mother, is it?
No, not at all. It's absolutely about the dads and the carers and the non-birth mothers. If you just take a step back and look at this event in someone's life, it's a massive change. So regardless of the family makeup, we've got a ginormous change. So the house tends to go from either one to two, if it's a single parent, or two to three. So there's a big change. You tend to go from two wages down to one, so there's financial issues around that. There's sleep deprivation, and you can take anyone and deprive them of sleep, and they're not going to feel great. Mm. And that's, I think, something we were talking about before, deciding between am I tired or am I depressed? And we can talk about that later. But masses of changes, physical changes, family dynamic changes. In same-sex couples, there's gender or roles around that we have to negotiate. There's a whole host of things. It's a massive change. Yeah. And just generally as psychologists, that's often the time when we meet people is when they're going through a time of uncertainty or a time of change. And so just broadly looking at the event, you know, it's pretty big.
Yeah. What advice would you give to people around preparing for that kind of change? Because it's something that we just stumble into, isn't it? I mean, do you see people before a baby's born and talk about expectations and how to gear up for that change?
Yeah, you've brought up a couple of really important points, actually.
That's why she's here, Alistair.
Expectations is a really important point. I'm starting to see more people in the pregnancy phase who perhaps are becoming more aware of what some of the complications might be and come and seek help prior.
Yeah. Can people prepare for this change, or is it just something that you have to roll with?
Yeah. I mean,
what can they do? If you can, how can you prepare for that sort of a change?
There's definitely ways that you can prepare. So if you know that, it's kind of going into risk factors a little bit. If you know that you've had a prior history of mental health concerns, one thing that we suggest people do from a psychological perspective is get your supports in place already. So you might actually start, you might go and meet a therapist prior, have that conversation where, look, I'm a bit concerned that this might be something that's going to happen. And then you're not having to meet someone more in a crisis event when you're feeling really awful. You've already gotten that out of the way. Being really clear around having good supports around. So really trying to mine those friends and family that are around you that can come and help. One of the things that we know is a really protective factor for new parents is time for self. It's a really great Australian study. It's about 1,500 participants. And they looked at the link between new mum's time for self and their mental health
is
outcomes.
Is there any such thing? Sorry, we've
got a lot of new mums.
Time for self, there is no such thing.
Yeah,
is a shower, maybe.
Well, this is the vital thing. This is the vital thing. We need to carve out this space where either the baby goes away or mum goes away or the parent goes away and they do something for themselves. The research says it doesn't actually matter what you do, but it's the time, because I've done a lot of work with new parent groups, and we talk about the fact that this is something that we need to try and carve out, because the buck stops with the main carer for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And nobody can do that job. No one can do a 24-hour day, 7-day a week job.
You try.
And that's getting back to your expectations. People expect we should just be able to do it. We should just be able to power through. And there's lots of expectations there. And often it's talking to people about those expectations and perhaps readjusting them to something that's a bit more realistic and getting around a lot of guilt. A lot of people have guilt for asking for help. we talk about that sort of thing quite a bit.
We are going to continue talking about this topic, and I'd really like to sort of, and you almost touched on it there, some of the warning symptoms that people can be looking out for themselves. But again, we remind our listeners, if any of what we are talking about is a little bit difficult, you can always reach out to Lifeline on 13 11 14. You are listening to Family Matters. We are looking at perinatal depression with Perinatal Depression and Anxiety Awareness Week approaching 12th to 18th of November.
I got distracted. You're listening to Family Matters with Beck, Steph and Gina, and our wonderful guest, psychologist Julie, as I like to call you.
Can I give a shout out to her gorgeous husband?
His ego is going to explode. Hi, Tom.
I think you've done that more times than is possibly appropriate.
You're on the best show next week, Tom.
I haven't seen a photo of him yet, so watch this space. Now, Julie, we're talking about perinatal depression and anxiety. How common is it?
Yeah, so depending on the numbers that you look at, so on average, about 1 out of 10 women will go through perinatal anxiety and depression.
According to Instagram, none.
No, that's right.
That's, yeah.
And if you look at dads, again, depending on the research, anywhere between 1 in 10 and 1 in 20. So dads matter too.
Wow.
And it's more of the conversation around dads as well. We don't have a lot of research around same-sex couples for dads and their rates. I can't speak about that. But certainly there's an increased rate in same-sex lesbian couples. When we talk about risk factors, that'll become apparent.
What sort of things should people be alert to, whether that is the woman that's had the baby themselves or their partner or friends? What sort of signs are there that maybe there's something they need to get some help for? Yeah,
sure. So one would be panic attacks. So if somebody has an overwhelming feeling of panic and terror, persistent generalised worries or fears about the well-being of themselves or the safety of their baby. So it's one element of saying, I'm worried about my baby and worried if it's too hot or too cold, or, you know, might be getting sunburnt, so we're going to keep them covered. But if it's a really persistent, never-ending, constant worry, we just can't switch it off, then that would be a concern to go and talk to somebody.
Oh, my God, every Greek mother.
If somebody starts to have obsessive or compulsive thoughts, so thoughts that are bit different to what they've been having before. Really abrupt mood swings is another sign. Being constantly sad or low or crying for no obvious reason. So a really common presentation when somebody comes to my office is that somebody has noticed that they've been crying every day and they can't sometimes even describe what it is that they're crying about, and that's a good sign. And sometimes that's something that we use to measure, you know, how many times have you cried this week? Feeling constantly nervous or on edge or panicky. Feeling constantly tired and lacking energy. And now this is a tricky one in this space because we've got...
Don't they not sleep when you have a newborn? Isn't that...
Absolutely, newborns are not very good at sleeping. A good rule of thumb would be that if you can't sleep when the baby is sleeping, so you've got an opportunity to sleep and you have a disturbance in your sleep, that's a really good thing to look out for. But there's a difference between feeling tired and feeling like I cannot go on. There's tired and then there is beyond tired. And this is often the tipping point for somebody perhaps not seeking help as early as they might because they think, well, I'm a new mum or a new dad, I should be tired. And so I'd encourage you to talk to your maternal health nurse or your GP or someone and just to discern whether it's normal tired or, you know, we're concerned.
Yeah. Jules, risk factors.
Oh, yeah.
Can we go through the risk factors?
There's more signs.
Keep going,
but
the signs.
Wait, there's more.
Actually, let's go the signs first and then let's look at the risk factors.
Great idea. So having little or no interest in all the normal things that you like. So
again, how hard is it to tell when you're a new parent? There is no normal things.
I think
there?
Food would be a big one. If you go after food as a parent, you there's generally rude. Something wrong.
I think that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, dumplings always.
So sometimes we ask that question, you know, are you enjoying things? Is there anything that you enjoy at the moment? And you'll see somebody sort of go, they'll look and they'll search and there's nothing. There's nothing that's giving them joy. And they'll sometimes feel like they have to say that their baby is giving them joy because we're programmed to, you know, we have to say positive things about the child. And when somebody's suffering from perinatal anxiety or depression, that can be an overwhelming feeling that just nothing is fun, nothing is exciting, nothing is interesting. Loss of interest in intimacy. Now, we're not talking sex straight after the baby is born, but sort of recoiling from normal intimate relations, so cuddles and kisses and just arm around the shoulder, if that's sort of recoiling from that. Withdrawing from family and friends, because very often people don't want to talk about this. We don't want to say that this is, you know, it's not going so well. Getting really annoyed and really irritated and frustrated very quickly. That's out of your normal. Feeling very angry. Depression can often masquerade as anger sometimes. Now, this is another tricky one, the next one. Difficulty in focusing and concentrating.
Again, and again, sleep deprivation for new parents.
Yeah, and suddenly you've gone from just looking after yourself, potentially, to suddenly having, you know, great responsibility for this little person. And so, again, it takes some nuanced questioning around somebody's concentration and their decision-making if they're having trouble making decisions. Sometimes taking risky behaviours, so it might be alcohol, drugs, other types of risky behaviour. And then having thoughts of harming your baby, that's a concern, and having thoughts of death and suicide. So they're concerns. And especially for those last two, I want to say that it happens and it's not uncommon, but it's really treatable. We can help with that. And so often people are very scared to talk about that sort of thing, but absolutely, that's a really good warning sign to say, I need a bit of a hand here.
And again, I'm going to hand out the number for our friends at Lifeline on 13 11 14. If you need support, don't ever be afraid to reach out and call for it. Mm. Now, we were talking earlier about risk factors, because some of those symptoms, like really from new parents that I know, they would easily, a lot of sleep deprivation, a lot of being frightened of being a new parent, they would easily tick those boxes and it wouldn't be this. I assume if someone hasn't, and this is why it's called perinatal depression, because they haven't had the baby yet, and if they're ticking a lot of the boxes there, okay, definitely that's a good sign. But what are some risk factors that someone might be at more risk of developing this illness? And it is an illness, isn't it,
Jules? Yeah, absolutely, mental illness, so the first risk factor is a personal history of mental illness. So if somebody's had depression or anxiety or bipolar or schizophrenia or any mental illness prior, then that increases their risk factors. And I probably wanted to say for the LGBTQI community, we know that they suffer mental illness at a rate at about 2.4 times the rate of the straight community. So that's definitely a raised risk factor. So there's more mental illness prior, so therefore that's a risk factor. If your partner is struggling with perinatal anxiety and depression and you're the non-birth or secondary carer, that's an increased risk factor. So if you're supporting someone with it. So very often the supporting partner is sort of, you know, soldiering on looking after somebody with perinatal anxiety and depression, and they're actually at risk too. And so this is something that I'll talk about for hours, but, you know, the secondary carer and dads matter as well. Stressful life events. So if there's been any major changes, and this will ring a bell with a few people, because often people are moving house, building houses, doing a whole host of things, renovating and things.
People want to renovate and nest.
I don't know.
This is a common thing.
Incredibly common. So if there's other stressful life events going on sort of parallel with the arrival of a baby. If there's been a troubled pregnancy, so if there's been any concerns during the pregnancy. Also if there's been issues with getting pregnant and any miscarriages or losses. So if there's been not a smooth road to the baby being conceived, that's a risk factor. Relationship difficulties. So if the relationship is difficult and there are some issues going on there, then that's going to increase the risk. Lack of social support. So social support is a vital factor in any mental illness. The more we can connect people with supports around them, community supports, friends and family, you know, golf clubs, pick a thing. We need people around us, and people who are isolated, definitely it's increased risk factor. And the final one is infant temperament. So if you have a very, if you have an unwell baby or an unsettled baby, some of them just are like that. Nothing to do with the mum or the dad or the parent. Just is what it is.
My parents have been in here before. Julie talked about when I had to go to the place with the nuns for the bad children. So,
but they gave you back. You didn't get to stay.
I know, the nun couldn't do anything with me, so here I am.
Julie, I'd just like to ask a little bit more about that social support network and how important that is. If you know someone, if you've got a friend or a family member and you've picked up some signs and you're concerned that they may have perinatal depression and anxiety, how can you approach them? What sort of language do you need to use and what can you suggest?
Actually, we might come back to that because that is quite a big answer there. So we'll get to the ads a little bit early and then we'll come back to that language.
Stay tuned on Family Matters.
There's more from the Family Matters team in just a moment on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Family Matters with Beck, Steph and Gina. I'm used to Dave being here and doing that bit.
That's my point. I point nicely.
That's why you're the...
And don't forget, there's some juice stuff that we need to give out.
Now, that sounds weird if you've only just tuned
and
in.
And you saw me grabbing my boob juices.
Which is not that good for radio. We are giving away two tickets to the heartwarming comedy Boob Juice, which is playing at the Butterfly Club. So if you're a member and you would like to win those tickets, message in 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au.
And what I love about this show is it's looking at this topic where I don't think people talk about perinatal depression enough. And most of us probably call it postnatal depression, but we're being schooled tonight by Julie. She's explaining what perinatal depression is. And what I love about the actor Chloe is she's telling her story but using comedy to reach a broader audience. So good on you. And if you'd like to win those tickets, the show is on at the Butterfly Club between the 8th and 12th of November. Please message in with your member number. We can give them away or I'll go myself.
Now, before the break, we were talking about friends and family and concerns we may have about our friends and family and how we would approach someone and what sort of language, Julie, we need to use if we think, you know, someone we care about has got perinatal depression and how we can help them.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's important that it's gentle. And another thing that new parents often haven't had is much encouragement or praise over what they've been doing. So if I were concerned about you, I'd come up and say, it's amazing, you're doing a fantastic job, and I'm a little bit worried about you. Not but, and I'm a little bit worried about you. So the but discounts everything beforehand. Mm. But just something very gentle. I'm worried about you. I've been doing some research. Here's the Panda website, for example. There's a thing called an Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Scale, EPDS. It's very easy to Google and search for. It's 10 simple questions and it's an excellent validated measure. We use it all the time in practice. And somebody can do that quiz or that measure and have a look at their score, and that can sometimes help them say, well, actually, I'm sitting here on 12 or 13 or somewhere close to there. That's the trigger point for me to go off and see someone to see what I can do. But it's that very gentle, you're doing a great job. If it were my partner, sweetheart, I love you. I think you're doing a fantastic job and I'm worried about you. I've noticed that you've been crying a lot. This is a really difficult time. I want to be there to support you. Do you think we might need to do anything else? And just open gently open it. The worst thing that you could wander on in any mental health concern is say, you need some help. Mm. You've got to go and see someone.
I reckon there's real power in that gentle opening the door. Like, you know, I know I've had that before in my life when I've been struggling at different times and just someone going, I'm a bit worried about you. Like, oh, thank God someone's noticed and now I can talk about it, you know. Because I think if you're in that space, there's a lot of bottling it up and, you know, sometimes you do just want someone to ask so you can open the door to it yourself, I guess.
And probably the second thing would be don't just ask once and accept the first answer that you get.
Good
we don't want to badger someone. You know, sweetheart, I'm really worried about you. I've noticed these things that are different. Sometimes people have, they're right in it, they're in the muck and the mire, and they haven't actually noticed that they haven't smiled for 2 weeks, for example. They haven't noticed that they haven't laughed for 2 weeks, you know. It's just those very, across the board, that gentle manner of asking would be the way.
Jules, we've talked about kind of symptoms, we've talked about risk factors and how to reach out to people, but what I loved, what we talked about off air earlier, is this is treatable. This is an illness and people can actually get help for this. Mm. So amongst all this language, what is it that people can do to get help for this illness?
Yeah, so there's a number of ways that you can get help, and there's also a number of things that you can do practically. So if we start with the help, a great place to start is with your GP or with your maternal health nurse to discuss with them.
And if cost is a factor, GPs can then put in a mental health plan.
That's right, yeah, absolutely, mental health care plan. And depending on where you're referred, the services may be bulk billed. Mm-hmm. From a psychological perspective, obviously I'd recommend seeing a psychologist. But other things that people can do is become connected with other new parent groups and have people around them. So that social support and being able to speak to other people who are in it at the same time as you. Mm. One of the things that new parents talk to me a lot about is that sort of they might have a 6 or 7 week old baby, and they can even talk to somebody with a 2 year old baby who just doesn't get it anymore. Yeah. They're not in the midst of it anymore. Yeah. So that's social support. So to summarise, there's psychological help, there's medication, which we would have a GP and or a psychiatrist involved with that, and counselling. Yeah.
And we talked about this earlier because, you know, we usually, you know, you can't stop us talking off air, but we were just saying we hear time and time again that some of these mothers' groups, and I'm sorry to use that gender term, but... Mm. You know, people talk about, everyone was pretending like their kid was reading Chaucer at, you know, 6 months. But, you know, sometimes people hide their true selves in this. Should you just be changing mother's group if that's what, can you? I don't know, Steph.
Yeah, you can change your mother's group. I was really fortunate with my first child. I attended a mother's group and, you know, some of us are still in touch and we were a great support for each other. But I have had friends who didn't have that same experience and they swapped mother's group. Mm. But I think with that first one, it's really important to have people around you and people who are going through that same experience. Mm. And as you say, it's very different for someone, you know, you may have a friend who's got a 2 year old, but that it's a completely different experience to having a newborn. So if you can find some people who are, you know, who can share the joy and also, you know, the tough times, it makes a big difference.
Another point to add is that the psychological research shows that 74% of people who have been diagnosed with perinatal anxiety and depression all say they wish they'd sought help much earlier.
Yeah.
So I suppose the biggest thing is to not feel guilty about accessing the help. You're not letting anyone down. It's in going out and seeking help, that's strength, that you know, heading toward a recovery is actually takes strength. You're not letting anyone down. So,
There's no failure in parenting. No. I mean, this is the other thing. There's so much pressure. Mm. You know, when you are a new mum, I found that. And I just think that, you know, there's no failure.
Oh, look, there's a few times I think I could call my parents up on some bad decisions they made for me. You know,
when they brought a
mayor instead of a doctor when I busted my arm, I'd call that up for, but I doubt it was depression. I doubt, you know.
No.
I got that one wrong.
With a newborn and when you're a new mum or a new dad, you know, you're just doing your best.
You are.
You really have no idea what you're doing, but you're doing your best.
And we have had a message in from James who says, this is such an important topic to discuss. Thank you for continually tackling the tough topics and doing it with humour and intelligence.
Does that mean James wants tickets to the...
I think James does.
James, for a compliment.
Boob too. Yeah, James, we give away anything for a compliment. And James has also said that Queer Space Drummond Street Services offer programs and support groups for new parents and also specifically new dads, which is great.
Fantastic.
Can we actually quickly talk about the new dads research you got? We've only got like 2 minutes to go. You've written a master's. You can summarise, 20,000 words in 2 minutes?
Master's in 25 words or less. So dads are at risk as well. Yes. The signs and symptoms they would experience are quite similar. Lack of interest in their baby, fear of caring for the baby. Again, that low mood, lack of joy, lack of intimacy. Another overwhelming story that people tell us is they often say, I just want to run away, or I just want to disappear. And those are two words that come, well, two sentences, sorry, that come out very, very regularly. So those feelings. So for mums, dads and families and carers, those sorts of thoughts are common.
So, you know, feeling shit is normal, isn't it? During when you get a new baby, you're tired, but there is feeling shit and then there is...
Then there's feeling shit all the time. And I think that's what often people are struggling as to, do I need help or don't I?
Yeah.
It's a hard time. It's a tough time. It's a tumultuous time. It's a sleep-deprived time. But it shouldn't be all shit.
Yeah. No, because I have to tell you, it is incredibly joyful too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, the feelings you have around that are amazing. So,
Julie, we're going to keep you on to right up until the end of the hour because I'm sure there's a few more tips and not tricks, but tips
sure,
that we can
tips and tricks
pass on to our lovely audience.
You're listening to Family Matters with Beck, Steph and Gina. We're nearly at the end. I can't believe it.
I was going to say you're doing a lovely job and you're doing a lovely job.
Aww. Aww.
There you go, Dad.
Nice.
Now, Julie, we are keeping you right up until the end of the hour because it will cost too much to visit you as a psychologist. So I'm just going to keep you in here. Now,
sure.
For the last 4 minutes that we have, some practical tips.
Absolutely. So practical tips for the people around the new parents. Shower them with healthy food.
Ooh.
Give them nice...
That's a great suggestion.
Portion, meal-sized portions ready to go. If you are struggling, how do I help? Give them healthy food. Not a Boston bun, healthy food.
I can make things in my Thermomix.
Yeah.
Thermomix.
Spectacular.
There's a whole other show I could do on that. Go on.
Because mental health's really well supported by good eating and exercise and serotonin's made in your gut. So anyway, moving on. So healthy eating is something that the families can do, but also the people around. Social activity and healthy relationships is vitally important. So just go visit people. Mm. Just go and say hi. You're not... If you are in the way, just maybe leave after 5 minutes. But people are often feeling really socially isolated, so tips is just to go and visit people. As we discussed earlier, time for self. So if you can go and help somebody by saying, I'll hold the baby while you go for a walk. I'll hold the baby while you go down to the supermarket. I'll take the baby for a walk so you can just lie down for, you know, half an hour and just relax. Practical tips for the new parents is good sleep habits. And this is a tough one, but if you can sleep, don't stay up watching movies and stuff like that. Just dive into bed. Sleep when the baby's sleeping is a really good one.
Actually, our midwife, when we had the sleep special, said exactly that. She sees too many people going, oh, I can't sleep. And the minute the baby's down, they're on social media, putting up pictures of how their baby sleeps so perfectly and they're exhausted.
That's right.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, so trying to sleep when the baby sleeps is a really good one early on. And I suppose that the parting message would be just to remember that you are still there. So sometimes people get quite lost in their parenting. And that's what we strive to do. We strive to help people find themselves again because they're often lost in all of that.
We were talking about that a moment ago, that you would grieve your old self if you've had a really fulfilling old, not that you're not fulfilled as a parent, but if you're someone who's travelled and not, you know, had to kind of keep watch of when you come home, that would be hard to let go.
And it's also really hard to even bring that up because it's a difficult thing to say. We've got this beautiful baby and I am really grieving for my former life. I'm grieving for my former relationship because the relationship has changed, grieving for my former disposable income. There's a lot of loss involved and it's difficult for people to say that.
But Steph, I think you said it well. There is so much joy in that too, and it's when you're not seeing that joy and everything is feeling shit, there might be something wrong. Might be a little test you can have. Now, Julie, we're going to put your contact details on our Facebook page and on this podcast. We're going to put all those support links to Panda,
Panda
seem to be absolutely amazing. Drummond Street as well, because there's actually a lot of resources out there. Mm. There's a lot of wives' tales as to what. Nah, you'll get over it. It's normal to feel this way. It's not. It's not normal to feel this way. And we want people to know that they can get help for this.
Yeah.
They really can. Thank you so much, Julie. We've taken you to the top of the hour.
It's been my absolute pleasure.
Bears are going to kick us out. What do we do when that happens, Beck?
I've got a good one tonight. Woof, grandstands need to be built in joy for all the fans of the woods.
Woof, woof, grrr. Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to Joy 94.9's Family Matters podcast, your light-hearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Did you know that Berry Street seeks members of our LGBTI communities to become foster carers? Not only do they have a proud tradition of training and embracing LGBTIQ carers, they officially support marriage equality. Learn more now at berrystreet.org.au, a proud Joy sponsor for over 5 years.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.